to.
From the Chief Judge, information report regarding the status of universal screening pilot program implementation.
Good morning, Chief Judge Kremers, and good morning, Ms. Slobodan.
Good morning. We have Chairman Johnson, committee. We have submitted to you an information report on the status of the universal screening. I've met with some of you individually to bring you up to date on where we are on the implementation of it. We are prepared to answer the questions you may have. Tell you that we're on track to go live with the implementation by mid-October. We're doing extensive training of the district attorneys, public defenders, Justice 2000 staff, judges and court commissioners. The week after next, September 27th to 28th. If you haven't seen it already, we did extend the invitation to all members of the county board, not just this committee, to come to an informational session on week 28th with Dr. Van Nostrand, who will provide more specific information about the tool that we're going to be using to assess people's risk of really two things of what we're assessing at risk. One is the risk to not come back to court. Obviously, it's important that we be able to process the case. And then the other most, probably even more important risk is what's the risk to reoffend while the case is pending. That's what we intend to measure with this, so we can make more informed decisions about who should be out on bail pending trial, and that may be a very expensive resource to county jail, who needs to be has a higher cash bail pending trial. So that's our goal, and that's our timeline, and our report.
Ms. Zableski, I apologize again for torturing your name.
That's okay.
She's
really
she's the judicial review coordinator, if I remember, ma'am, then I'm okay. But, would you give the committee members the times of the trainings in case some would like to appear? I'm going to try to be at 1, 7 o'clock in the morning.
There will be 3 sessions each day on the 27th and 28th, 7 a.m., 12:15, and 3:30. All of them will be held in room 609 of the courthouse. Then I was in Louisville at the NAPSA conference the past 2 days, and Dr. Van Nostrand was a presenter there, and we had a conversation about her doing an informational session specifically for county board members on universal screening risk assessment, provide you with some additional information. And she is willing to do that, and that will be September 28th at 2 o'clock in room 609 at the courthouse.
But if, and you don't need to let us know ahead of time, we will make room for any county board supervisor who wants to show up at any of the other 6 sessions. Those are an hour and a half long, and then the one we set up specifically for the county board is an hour.
Dr. Van Nostrand has done some work in other jurisdictions implementing risk assessment, pre-trial risk assessment, and she has she's provided some information from the experience of other jurisdictions in terms of their jail population and the outcomes that they've seen. So we felt it would be a good idea to have her do a session like that for you.
Now, Ms. Zableski, again, that would be 7, the middle time again?
12:15
at 3 o'clock?
3:30.
That would be on the 27th and 28th.
Right.
And Dr. Van Nostrand will give county board members a special briefing on the 28th?
At 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock. Upstairs?
609, yep.
Supervisor Jersey.
The recommendation here is to request to receive and place on file, so I would like to move that. And I don't know if we're still just perhaps making copies and sending to all the board members. That would be fine if that's our alternative. I want to thank Ms. Zableski for her hard work on this. I would just like to ask one question of the Chief Judge in terms of the budget planning going forward with regard to universal screening. Can you give us some information on what the request is in the 2012 budget?
Sure. We put a request in our budget for additional over last year's budget, $1 million roughly in this to pay for the universal screening. We proposed that that would be paid for by a cross charge with the Sheriff's Department because any savings that are achieved by universal screening will not be realized in the court budget. It'll be realized in the Sheriff's Department because it will show up in the form of fewer jail beds used. And so we proposed that it be handled in that fashion. I have not had a meeting yet with the County Executive's Office as to what their plan is for our budget. Our meeting is scheduled for next Friday, the 23rd. I don't want to speculate as to what the county executive's proposed budget will be with respect to that. But that was our proposal, that it would be zero net cost on the tax level.
I encourage that you are talking to the county executive's budget. I've been around here a couple of years when the county executive talked to the courts and presented the court's budget, which I found very, very unusual and, quite frankly, very unsettling for courts that are representing elected officials throughout. So hopefully we will have that kind of relationship with the county staff, and hopefully they understand the importance of universal screening. I will certainly be supportive.
Yeah, and I, just to be fair, we originally had a meeting scheduled for a couple of weeks ago that got canceled due to some conflicts with some other folks, not my schedule, but some other people's schedule, and got rescheduled for next week. So we would have had the meeting by now, but just wanted to put it together.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question, clarification for my benefit in the report. And I understand you're refining the risk assessment instrument, if you will. But there's a paragraph that on page 3 of the report that I just need to have a little better understanding about. It talks about research showing that higher risk defendants are more likely to fail, fail being defined as rearrest or failing to appear in court, if they are, well, that population is at higher risk. But the latter part of the paragraph says, low risk defendants are more likely to fail when overconditioned through unnecessary pretrial supervision or imposition of cash bond. That seemed counterintuitive to me. And
that's exactly the point. And you hit on the, one of the primary reasons why we're doing this. We believe, and research has supported this conclusion, and I probably would have been one of the worst offenders 18 or 19 years ago when I first became a judge, not would have been, probably was, because I believe that if I'm going to let him out on bail, I should, you know, put all these conditions on just to be sure, just to be on the safe side. Well, the reality is, if you look at what some of those folks are asked to do in terms of all the programs they're supposed to show up at, the reporting with their agent or their monitoring person, and then go to work or be a child care provider, whatever the rest of their situation is, I would suspect that everyone in this room, and we're all pretty successful people in this room, would have difficulty meeting all those conditions every day, day after day, and then still show up for all these monitoring things. And what happens is at some point they say, I can't keep making it down to the courthouse to the Justice 2000 monitor because it makes me late for work. And my boss is all over me because if I show up late for work one more day, he's going to fire me. So they make a choice. Do I go to work or do I go down to Justice 2000? Even though I've never tested positive, I still am supposed to go there. And so they pick work. Now, I would prefer they pick work in that scenario. But the result is they get a technical violation report sent to the court. Mm-hmm. So what research and experience has shown around the country is that if you over-condition low-risk people, you're setting them up to fail by putting too many conditions on them. And they would do just fine in the areas we care most about, in the pretrial population, which is come back to court when you're for court appearances and don't commit any new crimes. And they do just fine if they're the low-risk people without all those extra extradition time. And the critical point for the county is that if you don't pile those conditions on them, you save money in your pretrial program, or even more importantly, you have slots available for the medium-risk people who can safely be released from jail on a pretrial basis if you monitor them. So now you have the slots available to monitor that population of mm-hmm. folks, and it's a win all the way around. So that's the rationale.
Thank you for that explanation. Isn't part of that addressed, though, by, you know, administering these monitoring programs in a fashion that would allow people to not have to, lose time from work?
It is, except that we don't have enough resources to do that, and we're limited in terms of, you know, we can't run the pretrial monitoring programs 24/7, so if you have a bunch of people working first shift, that would mean we'd have to have monitors working second shift, and now we've got a budget issue that's problematic for us. Yeah.
And how does the imposition of cash bond on lower risk offenders cause them to fail?
Well, it's not just that. That's not the problem. It's putting what I can tell you as a judge or as a judicial officer what the rationale, the thought process that goes on is you're not sure what kind of risk this person poses. The defense attorney is asking to let them out without bail or low bail. The DA is asking for cash bail to see if you don't have the risk information either. And as a judge, you sit there and say, well, okay, fine. I'll go along with the defense in terms of a low cash or no cash bail. But just to be on the safe side, I'm going to put a bunch of conditions of monitoring on when I don't really need those. And that's going to be the test for us is educating the district attorneys in the first case, in the first place, because they're the ones making the recommendation for bail, and then judicial officers in the second place to follow the research that says, look, we can tell you what the risk of this person offending is for not coming back to court. And make your bail decisions based on a validated risk assessment tool, not because that's what we've always done.
Thank you. Can you provide any further insights into the validation process and what have we learned to date in terms of what are the glitches or what needed to be fixed in our original?
One of the things that we've been using a risk assessment instrument here internally. That information hasn't gone to the court for decision making purposes. It's used internally by Justice 2000 to classify people and their supervision levels. When we started discussing using that tool in universal screening, one of the best practices is to validate that tool for your population. That tool was borrowed from Racine County, as many jurisdictions across the country do. They borrow tools. So we engaged the services of Dr. Marie Van Nostrand and Dr. Chris Lowenkamp, who are nationally known experts on pretrial risk assessment. We sent them probably 4,000 records, supervision records from the pretrial programs, and asked them to tell us whether the tool was performing in a manner that we could be confident in terms of predicting risk for rearrest or failure to appear during the pretrial phase. What we learned from that is while the tool was what they termed acceptable, it really needed to be tweaked. There were risk factors that turned out being to be better predictors for failure to appear and rearrest than what we were using in that tool. So what they did is they ran a data analysis, and basically we modified the tool and elevated its performance in terms of how it predicts risk for failure to appear and rearrest. What we've done is taken a tool that was probably adequate and elevated it to, at least from the researcher's perspective, to a tool that is a very good tool in terms of predicting a person's risk for failure to appear and rearrest.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And what's going to be the success parameter when we implement this? How do we know that we have we have achieved what we've set out to do. The lower rearrest and failure to appear rates.
We should expect to see lower rearrest and failure to appear rates for people who are released from custody. We should also see, we'll look at a number of factors in addition to failure to appear and rearrest. We'll look at things like how often is the result of the tool used and followed by judicial officials in making release and bail decisions. If we have a tool that we're providing information to the court on and making recommendations, but we have a 60% what we call override rate,
yeah,
then we know we've got a problem with the information. People aren't relying on it, there's a face validity issue or something like that going on. Ideally, you'd like to see an override percentage or override rate of about 15% or less. So we'll measure things like that. We will be looking at number of jail beds saved as a result of getting people out of the system earlier. We hope that that's what we're going to see with the imposition of the risk assessment tool in Praxis. We should see better use of our pre-trial supervision resources. What you'd like to see is, I think right now, for example, in our GPS pre-trial monitoring program, over 30% of the people referred to that program are low-risk people.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to safely release them to the community, tell them when to come back to court, and they should be fine. We should be able to use those slots for the medium to higher-risk folks, so we'll have better use of our resources. So we'll be able to say X percentage of people referred to pretrial services had a risk level of X, Y, or Z, so that we know we're targeting those resources to the people who really need them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thank you. This is all very helpful, and conceptually, I certainly this makes a great deal of sense, and the devils, of course, are in the details and in the implementation. But the other point that you made, I think, is an important one, and that is that we're not turning the judges into automatons that are just kicking out a number and making a decision. There's still going to be some subjectivity involved, and their judgments are going to be continue to be important in this decision making. There's some factors that aren't always able to be quantified.
That's absolutely correct. The goal of this is not to give a judicial officer or a DA a piece of paper and say this is what you have to do with this person. What we're really trying to do is inform the decision and use an actuarial tool to do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other comments? Questions? Judge Kremers, if I can impose upon Mr. Heller to come forward to introduce himself to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself and briefly tell us what you've been doing.
My name is Jim Heller. I'm a recently hired coordinator for the Community Justice Council. I'm working as staff and executive committee, staff for some of the standing committees, putting together the planning process for the executive committee, and looking at some of the initiatives that the council has undertaken in the past 2 years.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. If I could clarify for members of the committee, and I know this Supervisor Johnson, Chairman, but the council was set up by a county ordinance about 5 years ago, and this position was funded in its first year by my going out and securing grants from the private foundations to pay for the coordinator's salary and limited benefits that we give him. And then going forward, we have reached an agreement with all the players, the partners in the council from the city, the state, and the county to pay for the coordinator's position from the funds, the federal grant funds we receive, community grant funds we receive. So I'm not using the county tax or $11 to pay for this position. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.